When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm sorry, I know you mean well. You just didn't think it through. You want to protect the world, but you don't want it to change. How is humanity saved if it's not allowed to evolve? There's only one path to peace. The Avengers Extinction.
Hello everybody and welcome to Pick a Flick, although a slightly different episode of Pick a Flick this time round, because we're taking the pick off and we're going to switch it round and we're going to fix a flick today. This is a brand new idea that we've had in the pipeline for a while and we will explain the details of it in a bit. But first off, let me introduce my co-host for this episode who is going to help me fix the flicking question. It's good old Mr. Andrew Brooker.
Hello, mate.
How are you? You're right.
I am great, thanks, mate. How about you?
Yeah, I'm a bit fluey. I'm a little bit, well, pre-fluey. I said to you before, Andy, it's like a pre-cold. So I'm lem-sipping. So if I'm a bit sniffly this time round, everybody, yeah, I'm in the pre-man flu stage.
Although just in time for the bank holiday weekend.
Perfect time, isn't it? You get an extra day off at the weekend? No, thanks. Yeah, apart from that, I'm all dandy. And we today are going to be attempting to fix a flick that you suggested. So this is your choice this time round. So I invited you on to go deep into this and talk a bit more about it. So what flick are we going to fix today?
Avengers: Age of Ultron, or as it's quite happily called in my house, Age of Boredom.
Age of Boredom, which I don't think would have been as attractive a title to Kevin Feige and all those guys.
Nah, probably not, but much more appropriate.
Well, this is it. We will the whole purpose of Fix a Flick, which, you know, we're uncharted territory here. You know, this is breaking the format of Pick a Flick, so we're going to do things slightly differently. But the whole idea of Fix a Flick is that we take a movie that, you know, quite a few people have said has problems, and you especially think has problems, and we're going to see how we could fix it to, if not make it better, then make it better for you, at least, I think, as a fan, as somebody who was disappointed in what you got. So that's the general, it's basically as simple as that, this whole episode. But we've timed it specially for Marvel, because obviously we're recording this the night before Civil War hits the UK, and we're pretty excited. You were almost going to a midnight screening, weren't you?
Yeah, I was. My ticket's booked. I might still change my mind and go, but I'm just, you know, work and life and, you know, things just don't always let you go.
We're on the cusp of what people are talking up in reviews as one of the best Marvel films ever, Civil War. So
is that what they said?
Yeah, it's.
I admit I've not read a single thing. I'm hoping. Well, I was hoping to go in tonight, but probably not. I'm hoping to go in completely blind. The only trailers I've watched are the ones that have appeared when I've been at the cinema.
Yeah,
the, you know, I've not read reviews, I've not seen the clips that keep appearing from on my Twitter feed. I'm avoiding everything.
Well, truthfully, I'm pretty much exactly the same. I know from like headlines of reviews that, you know, people are basically saying, oh, the Civil War is brilliant. I've not read them either. I'm the same as you. I'm trying to avoid as much as I can. I know very little about the story, about everything, so I'm trying to remain unspoiled. So there won't be any spoilers, obviously, for Civil War in this episode, because we don't know. We haven't seen the film, and we're not spoiler phobes, you or I. We don't want to know everything before we go into a movie. But yeah, the early buzz for Civil War is that it's really good, and that it could be one of the best, and it's possibly better than Winter Soldier and everything like that. So it could even be better than the Avengers Assemble, which is going some. Well, yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, well, I mean, Winter Soldier is my favourite of the Marvel films so far.
Yeah.
So for it to be better than that would be a big ask for me. Well, I'd be happy if they tried it.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it could be, and I'm the same with Winter. I love Winter Soldier as well. I think it's really good. But I think with the same people involved, there's every chance it could eclipse it. So yeah, we'll soon see. We'll soon see, and obviously you'll be able to find reviews of Civil War on one of the Black Hole Media podcasts, probably Black Hole Cinema. But that'll be coming soon. Before then, though, today we are going to, as Andrew says, we're going to look at Avengers: Age of Ultron, which is the sequel to 2012's Avengers Assemble and the 11th film in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It was written and directed by Joss Whedon, and features an ensemble cast that includes, wait for it, Robert Downey Jr., Chris Hemsworth, Mark Ruffalo, Chris Evans, Scarlett Johansson, Jeremy Renner, Don Cheadle, Aaron Taylor-Johnson, Elizabeth Olsen, Paul Bettany, Kobe Smulders, Anthony Mackie, Hayley Atwell, Idris Elba, Stellan Skarsgård, James Spader, and Samuel L. Jackson.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, even though some of those are only, like, in it for about 12 seconds, you know... Just that list of people, you don't see lists like that very often nowadays.
It's a pretty remarkable list of talent, isn't it, in one film?
Yeah.
And in the movie, the Avengers fight Ultron, who is an artificial intelligence obsessed with causing human extinction. The sequel was announced in May 2012, after the hugely successful release of the first Avengers. And Joss Whedon was pretty swiftly brought back on board in order to helm the second and have a general overview of Phase 2 of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which was all leading towards this. And it came out in April of 2015, so it's a year on now from Age of Ultron. And it received overall positive reviews from critics, with most enjoying its extravagant yet unmemorable action sequences and the villain. It grossed over $1.4 billion worldwide, making it the seventh highest grossing film in history, and the fourth highest grossing film of 2015. I don't think it will retain that seventh highest grossing film, you know, mantle forever, no. Because the way that movies make money now, I can't imagine it being there for as long as films would have been in the old days. And obviously the next two Avengers sequels are Infinity War Parts 1 and 2, which are coming in May 2018 and May 2019 respectively. So, it's a pretty big film, and what we thought we'd do for this episode is go through it in stages. So, we're going to do it where we talk about what we think of the film, and in general, what we did like about or Age of Ultron. This might be very brief for you, Andrew.
it won't be that brief. It's grown on me a little bit over the last year, but I don't think I'll be quite as savage as I would have been, say, 2 days after I first saw it.
Then we're going to talk about, we're going to say, where did it go wrong? So we're going to ask, what did Age of Ultron do badly? And then finally, we're going to talk about how we could fix it. And we've got some ideas, I think. And then we'll hopefully try and fashion out a more appealing sequel movie to the Avengers. So let's begin then with what we think of Age of Ultron. Andrew, let's do what we do on the X-Cast, which is our X-Files podcast that you do regularly with me. If you were going to give a score out of 10, what would you give Age of Ultron?
Now, I think I'd probably give Age of Ultron probably a 6.5 out of 10.
Right.
I don't think it's bad anymore. Like, when I first saw it, I thought it was awful. I don't think it's bad anymore, but it's definitely average at best, I think.
Yeah.
And when you compare it to what came before and after, it's definitely average.
Yeah, I think I would probably go with a 7, actually. And originally, it probably would have been like a 6. But I think, like you, I don't quite feel the same. I was going to say vitriol, but I don't think I felt vitriol a year ago. I remember coming out of the cinema being disappointed for several reasons. And I think, you know, admittedly, one of the main reasons, and anyone who knows me who's listening to this will know that quite a lot of us went to an IMAX 3D showing of Age of Ultron.
Wow.
Yeah. And unfortunately, I mean, I booked the tickets for like 10 of us. About 7 of the people I was with came out with a stinking headache because I booked the tickets far too close to the front, really. I didn't have much of a choice because I had to get 10 people on one row. and we were so close to the front. There were times when you couldn't see everything in your mind's eye. You know, it was too much, and it was.
I've done IMAX showing similar, like right down at the front. You're like, fucking hell! You come out with a neck ache.
Yeah. Neck ache, headache, just brain overload. And I mean, the thing is, I mean, this is an entirely different kind of rant for a different kind of podcast, but I want to see IMAX without 3D, and unfortunately, I don't have a choice anymore. I have to, unless a very, very select cinemas across the country do show films in IMAX, simply IMAX. They don't in Birmingham, where I live, and I have to watch it in 3D. And I was thinking about, in terms of Civil War, and I was saying to my girlfriend, I want to see it in IMAX 3D, and in the last 24 hours, I've been sitting there thinking, well, I came out of Age of Ultron pissed off at that.
Yeah.
And I thought, why am I going to put myself through that again for a film that I might actually like less if I watch it in that? So we're going to go in 2D. And I watched Age of Ultron in preparation for this podcast in 2D. And I've got to say, I did like it more. I did enjoy it more. I think there are virtues to it that weren't helped by the horrible, insane mess of 3D.
Well, yeah. I mean, I made the decision after Thor, I think. We only watch Marvel films at the cinema in 2D. If they start filming them in 3D, I might go and try one out. Retrofit 3D just gives me a headache.
Yeah.
And like you say, I mean, our local IMAX, if there's 2D films, they do show them 2D IMAX. Two of my Deadpool screenings were 2D IMAX.
Two of your 100 Deadpool screenings.
Yeah, 143 screenings. But yeah, but actually, in 2D, it's a fantastic cinema. You know, my local one, it's obviously it's the IMAX screen, and it's got Atmos sound in it as well. It blows you away. But yeah, I watched one film in IMAX 3D over here, and that was The Walk.
Okay.
Because you kind of needed to watch it in 3D because of what it was. But yeah, Marvel films, always 2D. The 3D is too jarring for me, even in a standard 3D screen.
I think I will make an exception. Yeah, I think I'm going to stick to that similar kind of rule myself. I think I'll make an exception for Doctor Strange, because by the sound of it, from what I've seen already in the trailer, it looks like it's been specifically retrofitted with a kind of a 3D element, which might make more sense than just having it lobbed on. So
that's going the kind of Inception route of twisting things around, isn't it? So that might work really well.
Mm.
What I will probably do is go see it in 2D, and if I like it, go again.
Yes,
yeah. God bless the Limitless card.
Yes, I might well do the same. But, and I think, you know, if I could see my time over again, I would have gone and seen Age of Ultron in 2D. And I do wonder back and think, well, would I have had a different reaction? I'm not sure I would have done. I think I would have still been disappointed. And I think that, well, we'll get to what's wrong with it. But let's try and. Because that's a longer conversation.
So just turning it into a rant, just actually try and stick to the schedule.
See, it would be easily done. The things that it does well then, I mean, what would you say that Age of Ultron gets right?
It's casting for its bad guy.
Yeah, definitely.
It's just every time I saw a trailer for Age of Ultron, and especially the first time Ultron's revealed and he does the thing from Pinocchio. Terrifying, absolutely terrifying. He's got such a perfect voice for that bad guy.
There are no strings on me. That kind of thing.
That was like your Bane from our Batman Superman.
Yeah, all the impressions are Bane. All the impressions end up being Bane. but yeah, that it's that really sort of creeping.
But it was genius casting as well, because the guy had just come back into like the public eye a little bit after films like The Watcher and Crash, and people didn't really know who James Spader was anymore. And now the dude turned up in Blacklist.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, everybody knows who he is again, which is a great thing. I've been a Spader fan for a long time. But then they took his character. They basically removed his voice from Blacklist and put it into Ultron.
They did, actually. And
it was genius. It was a genius bit of casting. And it was probably the thing I was most excited for.
Yeah.
You know, but by this point, like you say, well, what's this, film number 11? You know, the smash, bang and wallop of Marvel films doesn't get me that excited anymore, because I've seen 10 of them already.
Yeah.
So you need to do something a little bit different. And when they grabbed my attention with Spader, and I thought it was a genius move, and I thought that was probably the best thing they'd done about this film.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, of all the things I came out thinking, I mean, it's funny, when we came out the cinema, I was talking to all my friends about it, and a lot of them were talking about how Ultron wasn't great and all that. And I said, you know what? Ultron, I think, is the best thing about this entire film. You know, I came out really, really, and the second time round, I was watching it and thinking, okay, that plot wise, there are issues with it all, but in terms of the character, he's brilliant, because for a start, I mean, one of the big things that struck me watching it again was that there's a lot more of the classic kind of Joss Whedon writing in this film than I remember there being, almost as much as in the first Avengers. Actually, there's lots of good lines, there's lots of one liners, there's lots of throwaway jokes, there's lots of idiosyncratic kind of moments and beats of you know, Whedon-esque humour. I mean, one that really stands out for me that I laughed a lot at the first time round, and I laughed again, was at the very beginning, Baron von Stryker saying to his men, "No surrender!" And then he turns to the other guy and goes, "I'm going to surrender." which I thought, that's just perfect Whedon. That's exactly Joss Whedon. It's the kind of thing that very few other people can do, that complete sort of quick inversion with comedy of something. And Ultron's full of that. Ultron has all those kind of affectations, in that he'll come out with quirky lines, and you know, he'll say things and go, "Oh, I'm sorry. I took your arm off." But you know, and it's lots of you know, he is. I was talking about it to my girlfriend as we were watching it. You know, he is like a childlike version of Tony Stark.
Yeah,
who is warped and twisted, and I just thought he was really, really well done.
I mean, I will be honest, I think there are issues with what they do with Ultron, and I think there are issues with some of Ultron's writing. I think it's a bit all over the shop, but obviously we'll get to that when we get to what we don't like or what they did wrong. While he is definitely the best, and he is fantastic, and Spader, via just voice, acts his ass off in this film.
Yeah.
He's amazing, but there are definitely issues with it. But he is very funny, and you know, his character is very funny. In a way, that's where one of my problems lies, though, I think. You know, but yeah, he was amazing, absolutely amazing. And I wanted him to have a better character by the time I left the film.
Yeah,
I wanted him to be, I wanted him to be doing the voice of Thanos, so I knew he was going to be coming back. I feel gutted that I'm not going to see him in another Avengers movie.
It is a shame. It is a shame. At least he's got one great one and done, I suppose.
But they do have this great way of, they, especially for their bigger films, they're picking amazing bad guys.
Yeah.
You know, Tom Hiddleston as Loki in two of them was just awesome. And now, you know, we've got Spader in this one. And, oh crap, who is it doing Thanos?
Josh Brolin.
Josh Brolin, thank you.
Yeah.
And he's a spectacular actor.
Mm.
And he's the same kind of, he's got that voice for really kind of maniacal evil, and I'm quite looking forward to seeing where he takes that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it'd be very, very much sort of all over the top melodrama. Which will mean it's a different context in terms of villainy, because Loki was very, you know, smug and everything in the first Avengers, and you took pleasure out of him getting smacked down and, you know, being beaten down by all these guys, really, even though he was unleashing hell. And then in this one, Ultron, what's really good about him, and I think this is even though, there are a lot of problems, there are plot problems, I agree, with Ultron, but I think thematically, this film is good. I think thematically, it understands what it's trying to do and what it's trying to say, And I think the bigger problem that we will get to in a bit is that it gets lost under the machine of Marvel. And I think that what Joss Whedon originally had and what the kind of thing he wanted to do, I think ended up becoming chewed up. But there are bits in there.
I agree completely. Yeah. I think it's one of those things that I would really, really like, but because it's Marvel, we never will. I'd love to see a director's cut of this film. I'd love to know what Joss Whedon wanted to do with it, because there are some quite severe pacing issues.
Yeah.
And, you know, where it seems like quite, obviously we'll get to this in a bit, but obviously where quite important bits have been left on the editing room floor because Marvel didn't want them there.
Yeah, I imagine there's a director's cut in his head. You know, quite a good one, actually. Because, I mean, he's recently come out, hasn't he, Joss Whedon, and a year on, and admitted that it's not quite the film he wanted it to be and there were mistakes. And the sad thing is that he's... And it could be a little bit of being quite self-deprecating and everything, but he's kind of sort of putting the blame on himself and saying, you know, it was me. And I don't think that's true at all. I think it was very much that he... I mean, he commented in during the press tour of this that it nearly killed him, and that you could tell there were issues, and he was playing the game, you know, as they do.
Yeah, didn't he look exhausted at the end of the press tour for this?
He looked fucking destroyed by.
Yeah,
and it was, and it's because I think he just spent a year or two of just battling with Marvel, and you know, I'm not having a go at Marvel. I'm not having a go at Kevin Feige because I really like them all, and I think overall they get it right. But I think the problem that this film had overall was that it was too much feeding a greater beast. And that's why when you do get the good bits in it and you do get the things they cling on to, they are a little bit rarer. I mean, a good example is Hawkeye. You know, all that Hawkeye stuff is Joss Whedon.
Yeah.
You can tell that, you know, he reacted to the fact that Hawkeye didn't get a lot to do in the first Avengers.
Which a lot of people moaned about it as well, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. And
me included, to be fair.
Well, yeah. Yeah, he was almost tokenistic in that one. And it's good that he becomes the human anchor to an increasingly over the top. And, you know, when you start getting characters like the Vision come in, I mean, you're talking, you are very much going into very, very comic book territory, you know, very.
You're close to X-Men levels of fantasy, aren't you?
Yeah, fantasy. That's exactly it. Yeah. You are getting much more into the fantasy levels of it, you know, the big space bound fantasy levels. And Marvel has always tried to keep one foot on the ground with these kind of things. Even things like Thor. You know, there's always tended to be that human element where you've got characters like Jane and all these guys there, although it'd be different for Ragnarok. I mean,
the thing with Thor that made it such a great film and actually, like you say, grounded it in some form of reality was the fact that it, for the first half, it was a fish out of water film. You know, it was a guy that had no clue what he was doing in our world kind of film.
Yeah.
And, you know, it grounded it in as much as we sat there laughing at him being a, you know, the world's worst tourist.
What Whedon, I think, understands with Thor, as a good example, better than anybody else, certainly the director, you know, even Kenneth Branagh, who did a good job with Thor, and especially Alan Taylor, who did not a good job with The Dark World. But what none of them seem to understand is how Thor is much better when he's A, played for comedy, and B, not leading the film himself. It's one of those things that Whedon just understands a lot of these character points, like he understood with Hawkeye and the family element and grounding him and making him very human. And I think the character points in this film, on the whole, I think work well. And it's the bigger plot mechanics that really let this down. I think if you were, you know, I remember him saying a year ago that when he was talking about the film, he was talking about how it was a much more intimate film. And I watched it yesterday and I was thinking about that and thinking, I can understand to some extent, but on the other extent, I think, because he said that before they were filming or when they were filming. And I don't think that, when he said that comment, I don't think the film we saw is that film he's talking about.
No, I think in that point you get, like, Hawkeye's cabin is definitely that kind of thing. The when we're all sitting around pre-party just chatting and trying to pick up Thor's hammer, you know, that kind of stuff.
Mm.
That's very, very intimate and more drama and scene setting than action. And that's I mean, I don't know an awful lot about Joss Whedon's stuff. I didn't watch Buffy or Angel or Firefly religiously when it was on. It just happened when it happened to be on the BBC.
Yeah.
So I don't know an awful lot about his work, but you can see that, like, he really likes that kind of stuff. He writes it very well, and he directs it very well. So he manages to have a room filled, you know, a room filled with people in a giant circle, and you can see all of them. They've all got a part in this little role, in this little scene. They've all got something to say, and everything just feels fluid. And yeah, that, I think those really intimate scenes are some of the best scenes in this film.
Oh, you did, definitely. The thing with Joss Whedon is, and you know, I'm relatively new to him in the sense that I only watched Buffy and Angel about 3 or 4 years ago. I binged it in a few months, and I, you know, after years of friends of mine telling me that I should watch it and being big Whedon fans, and it was after the Avengers, and I thought, wow, this guy is really good, you know, and I, you know, and I got to know a lot more of his stuff. But really, he, at heart, Joss Whedon's a character director. You know, I think he'd be much happier actually getting smaller films about characters and dialogue, and you know, he'd make a good playwright. He's got a real flair for language. But he kind of almost fell into being this A-list mega blockbuster director. You know, Joss Whedon had spent years battling with everybody to try and get films made and TV series made. The amount of TV series that he could have done that he had cancelled. You know, he was Firefly, everyone talks about being an amazing series that was cancelled too early. He tried to make Wonder Woman like 10, 15 years ago and nobody would let him. You know, the man has battled for years.
God damn.
Yeah, I mean,
I had no idea he tried to do Wonder Woman.
Oh, yeah. Joss Whedon's Wonder Woman is one of the great superhero movies we're never going to see. Regardless of how the Wonder Woman film next year will be, Joss Whedon's would have been better. You know, there's no question about that. He's one of these guys who the Avengers almost felt like he's what he deserved for so long, you know, of suffering and battling with studio executives who, you know, don't know their ass from their elbow. So he got in the Avengers, obviously, was brilliant. You know, I've said before, I think it's the Star Wars of its generation, the Avengers. I think it's tremendous entertainment. But this was always going to be difficult, I think, because you're following that film for a start.
Yeah.
And you're in the middle of a machine. And trying to find that intimacy and trying to find those character points, in the end, I don't think he does it.
No. I don't know if it's him. I don't think it's his writing. I'm almost certain it's not his directing, but it's definitely the guy breathing down his neck that's caused most of that.
Mm. Well then, in which case, we've touched on things that we liked, and then we've ended up going to things we didn't. Which is because this is why this film is flawed and actually needs fixing, because every time you come up with a good thing, it leads to a bad one. And that's a very telling thing, you know. So let's move on to what the film does wrong then. And so what would you say that in Age of Ultron, what is the biggest problem that this film has?
The biggest problem it has for me actually is the same as it's the thing it does best. It's its bad guy. I think they've ruined Ultron. So here's the thing with Ultron. Well, here's my theory on Ultron. And I don't, again, you have to remember, I don't read the comic books. I've never read an Avengers or any of the connected series comic books. I go in as a film fan and that's it. So I don't know if this is what Ultron looks like in the comics or anything. This is just how I saw it when I went to see the film. And the problem is, while they've got this really cool guy doing this really cool voice work, I don't think they knew quite what they wanted to do with Ultron once they turned him into this almost unstoppable being. When he's making jokes, that's really cool and he's really funny. And he's also kind of really, like when he takes Andy Serkis's arm off.
Yeah.
It's quite a nasty thing to do, especially in a 12-rated comic book film. You know, he's accidentally ripped this guy's arm off. And he's like, oh, I'm sorry. And I tell you what, if they'd have done it better, it would have been Heath Ledger's Joker.
Mm.
And that's what I think they needed. They needed that. If you're going to make him funny, or if you're going to make him really kind of darkly funny, and I know I'm going to take so much shit for using the word dark when it comes to a Marvel film, because you really shouldn't. But I do think that Ultron is a bad guy because he is essentially unstoppable until you get the Deus Ex Machina levels of good guy like the Vision.
Yeah.
You know, until you get that, Ultron is not this unstoppable bad guy. I want him to be either A, this makes me sound really bad, I want him to be more violent, I want him to be nastier, because he's killing people and taking joy in doing it. You know, he shouldn't be cracking jokes while he's doing it unless he's the Joker.
I would say to that, I think that the reason that he's doing that is because there are components of Tony in him. And I think the point, this is the big difference with Ultron, you see. This is the big, one of the biggest changes is that Tony Stark doesn't create Ultron in the comics. Now, I'm not a comic book fan either. Like, I don't dislike comic books, I've just never read them, really. So I'm the same as you. I've never read Avengers comic books. I don't have any comic lore knowledge except what I've picked up over time and what I've read into it and I've looked into it.
Yeah.
And the big thing is that, yeah, Tony Stark didn't create Ultron at all in the comics. Ultron was created by Hank Pym, who is, of course, played by Michael Douglas in Ant-Man.
I was going to say, yeah, Michael Douglas in Ant-Man.
Yeah, and obviously Hank Pym is the original Ant-Man. And he's also one of the great scientists of the Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
And he creates Ultron. This was in the 60s when the first comic book came out. He creates Ultron based on his own brain patterns.
Okay.
Yeah, and then the robot develops its own intelligence, rebels, and stuff happens from there, really. And, you know, there are, I think there are elements taken from that original story and put into this to an extent. Like, there's a very early on in one of the first appearances, he brainwashes Jarvis. Jarvis was a human character in the original comics. He wasn't a software, as he is in Iron Man. And he brainwashes Jarvis into working for him.
Okay.
So, they obviously adapted that to have Jarvis become incorporated into him. And in the end, Ultron actually creates the Vision as a weapon to destroy the Avengers in the comics. So, and obviously in this case, he ends up creating the Vision out of, you know, what he's trying to do, whatever that is. And then, as you've said, it's not really clear.
Yeah.
So there are important changes made with Ultron, which I think were intentionally trying to set up the idea that he is this twisted, almost the whole idea of him being this artificial intelligence, it's almost secondary to the fact that he's this twisted sort of child of Tony, born with through Tony Stark's egotistical belief that he can save the world and that he can protect the world. I think the point of Ultron is that it's Tony's hubris given form, really.
The thing is, I mean, I've got this, I really love, like, twisted, like, really, really black comic bad guys. You know, people that, you know, they crack jokes as they're pulling heads off, and you know, you go, "Oh, that was really funny, but I shouldn't have laughed at that," kind of thing. And that's kind of you get hints of that with Ultron, and you get, you know, like I said, like with ripping off Andy Serkis, I'm so sorry, you know, I'm sure we can fix that. You know, I laughed my ass off. I thought it was great. But I wanted more of that.
Yeah, yeah.
And especially with that guy doing the voice, because that guy is has the ultimate maniacal voice for it. I felt really disappointed in what I ended up with.
Yeah, I think you weren't the only one. I think a lot of people felt that with Ultron. I think I agree in the sense of quite what his ultimate plan ended up being, because I don't think that was really as clear or as interesting as it could have been. He ended up.
That was absolutely thrown in at the end of filming, going, "Oh, we need to quickly do this," because no one knew what they were doing.
Yeah, well, exactly. They needed, you know, in this film, you know, there's a few. One of the big problems is the ending, in that it ends up becoming the classic Marvel ending where something is falling onto something else. You know, that's been something they've done for a lot of films now. It's this same kind of something, some area, some place is in peril, something's about to fall on something else. They're all in the middle of it. There's explosions going on. There's all kinds of stuff. And, it happened in Thor the Dark World. It happened in Guardians of the Galaxy. It happened in Winter Soldier in different ways, but it's the same essential idea.
That last massive set piece that's supposed to make, you know, put everyone in peril, but actually it's a giant CGI fest.
Yes. Exactly, and that's where it ended up building to. And Ultron, obviously, you know, he ends up having this complete sort of robot army that he's, sending armies into battle against the Avengers. It's just like, at that point, I just thought, I don't care anymore. And I remember caring when the ending of the Avengers was going on. You know, the first Avengers had all that stuff. It had all alien things flying through New York, and it had tons of CGI, and it had the big, you know, but it also had things like that big alien sort of snake thing that comes out of the space, and then you've got the moments where Hulk goes, "I'm always angry," and punches it, and that kind of thing was just, even in the middle of all this chaos,
things that make you cheer as it happens,
it was just the best thing in the world. It was just one of those rousing kind of It was, you know, to use the example I said earlier, it's the Luke destroys the Death Star moment. You know, it's that same kind of euphoria you get. You're like, yes! You know, and that's the point when they start to win. And it's it doesn't have that. It ends up just becoming this big, massive CGI, and it loses what it's about. It's just all... There's a GIF that I put on the Pickaflick page of them in the middle of the, like, the... I don't know how best to describe it. The circular room. Church. Yeah, the church. It is a church, isn't it?
Oh, that bit, that's Jesus Christ. Someone not long after the film came out, and I don't know how many people this would actually, that listen to this would get what I'm saying, but do you know what horde mode is?
Yeah. I do, yeah.
So you and a buddy stand in one place and just keep fighting off things until you can't fight anymore.
Yeah.
And someone described it as the Avengers Horde mode. And I've watched Age of Ultron 3 or 4 times since then, and that's all I can see.
Yeah.
Like, just of the Avengers playing Gears of War for real.
Yeah.
It's all... Yeah. It's ruined that scene completely for me.
Yeah.
Because that's all it's turned into. Just keep fighting the things.
Yeah. And that sums it up, right? Keep fighting the things. They just became things in the end. They just became... It was just Ultron going, I'm going to send an army and all this. And they're just fighting them off. And you're like, well, when's this going to end? And then he tries to have the emotional, you know, point of Quicksilver being shot. Yet everyone thought he was a bell end anyway. And nobody cares, right? Because there's a better Quicksilver that Fox are doing with X-Men anyway. So, not bothered. Yeah, so there's no, you know, I mean, I'm glad they didn't, but if they'd have killed Hawkeye, that would have fucking hurt.
Well, yeah, that would have been, it would have been the emotional thing you needed for that precise point in the film. What you get instead is you get the, what's the word for it? Like, redemption of the bellend that we've hated for the last hour and a half. You know, he redeems himself and then they kill him. So you're supposed to care and then be sad all in that 3 seconds that you notice that that's happening.
Exactly.
So, I mean, killing Hawkeye for the film would have been better, or as much as it would have pissed me off.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
It would have been, because like you said, it was teed up. I mean, Joss Whedon, this is the thing, he was intentionally trying to lead us down that path to the point where we thought he was going to die. The moment where he had a family introduced, I thought, oh dear, right, he's got happiness in his life. This surely means, and you know, everyone would go, well, if anyone's dispensable, it's him, surely, of all of them.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't have his own solo film career.
He made us all feel like a bunch of bastards for caring for him as well.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, you care about him and then suddenly he's gone. But Joss Whedon, I think, intention. Well, the thing is, what I wonder is, was that originally his plan? And did Marvel go, actually, you can't kill Hawkeye?
You can't do that.
Right? Because we need him later. And then you can just imagine him having to rewrite that. So then he has to kill Quicksilver. I don't know, there's just little things where I just think, this is where I think his vision was compromised. And I think, Yeah, and the biggest one, and this is my biggest problem with this film, is the fact that it's got so much teeing up the future that it forgets to become a film in its own right. The original Avengers didn't have any of that. The original Avengers is its own film that climaxes three or four films before it beautifully and then puts things in place where you know that the stories can continue. Brilliant. Great stuff.
Yeah. Was it now we have a starting point for phase two. So
phase two.
All of phase one has rolled up. We've got to the end of phase one. Avengers is done. And now phase two starts from that point.
Precisely.
Not teeing up the next 12 films during that point.
Exactly.
It's almost Amazing Spider-Man 2 syndrome.
Yeah.
Which is just a 2-hour long PowerPoint for what Sony want to do for the next four films.
Four films they're never going to make as well. That's the ultimate irony of that.
They tried to advertise their next four films in this film. Everyone went, the film you made was a piece of shit. We're not going to watch it.
Yeah, why would we want to watch the four that you want to do when this was crap? Age of Ultron isn't nearly as bad as Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Oh, no. And please, fanboys, please don't hurt me. I know
that's not what you're saying. But your point is...
But the point is, it acts like that. Yeah. For maybe at least the final act, while all hell is breaking loose, it plays as a... Don't forget about these people. They're coming back later. Don't forget about these people. We're doing these guys next. And it's like, just stop it. Let us enjoy the film and then start rolling out stories at the beginning of phase three. Yeah.
You know, I mean, in the first 10 minutes, you know, and I like the opening sequence, you know, as Whedon described it as like his Bond movie kind of pre-credit sequence, you know, with lots of action and stuff. You know, and you get that really great moment where they're all leaping into the fray and you have that slow-mo shot, which is the same one as the pan around in the original Avengers, which always gives me goosebumps.
Yeah.
It's not as effective, but it's a nice little moment. You know, and that all that's great. You know, that first opening 10 minutes is pretty good. But then even in that, you have to have the scene where I think it's Tony touches the Spectre, I think it is. And then he gets the vision of which is blatantly either the cliffhanger of Infinity War or one of the major moments in Infinity War, where they're all on Thanos' rock in space and they're all dead or dying. And then he gets that vision, and that's like, well, you know, I'm all for foreshadowing. You know, I love TV shows. I love TV shows and I love movies where you always get hints about what's to come. I really do. You know, I've always loved that stuff. You know, I couldn't have enjoyed Lost like I did if I didn't like that kind of shit. But
yeah, I mean, well, Fringe done something very similar. Yeah. When you sat and watched Fringe, it was like every episode had just a little hint of what might be coming.
Sure.
And you know, and especially as the seasons went on, you always had that thing, you know, oh, so is this gonna? And literally, like me and the missus would sit and spend ages talking about, well, this bit's got to come back at some point, and this bit's going to happen here. And I love that stuff. If it brings the conversation outside of just the 45 minutes that you're watching the show or the 2 hours you're watching the film, I think it's a great thing to do. But yeah, it shouldn't have been there.
Well,
I don't think. It was too early in the film.
I think it was too early in the film, but I think that the problem you've got in doing it in a film like this is that you're attempting to tee up half a dozen other things in a film that is supposed to be a conclusion to something you've been building towards. You know, I mean, the whole thing of Age of Ultron was... And it becomes a side point, but a Winter Soldier teed up the Hydra stuff, which was dealt with quite a lot in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., if anyone watches that, which I'm not sure they do, but they still keep renewing it, weirdly. But, you know, the Hydra stuff has never really been done properly, I don't think, in anything, really, properly, because in the film, it's skipped over. You know, the first 10 minutes, Baron von Stryker, who is such an interesting character from the things I've read, and that he's completely just tossed aside, right, you know, in order to get us to the point where we get Ultron. And one of the major things running through phase two was this Hydra thing, and it's just swept away so you can get to the whole idea of the event, you know, the Avengers getting to this point where they haven't got the resources they had with S.H.I.E.L.D., But you wouldn't really notice any difference because Tony Stark's got more money than S.H.I.E.L.D. probably anyway, so he can do it all. And then, so there's not really any demonstrable feeling that they're in trouble or that they don't have resources, really, you know. And then by the end, they've got this beautiful new base and everything's hunky-dory, you know, and it's like, well, how do we get there? It feels like really big things were skipped. And then in the middle of that, you've got all the stuff that's suggesting... Ragnarok in there, when you see Idris Elba as Heimdall, you know, suggesting that. You've got, like I say, hints to Infinity War. You've got all this. You've got hints to Civil War, a big hint to Civil War, when Tony and Captain America fight each other, you know, in Ultron's lab.
Yeah,
and that's the first instance that you go, oh, okay, this is leading towards that, isn't it? But you think I'm thinking, why aren't you giving me the film this? Why aren't you giving me Age of Ultron? Stop trying to give me all the others that we haven't seen yet.
Yeah, it feels like they're still treated, even though we're at this point 11 films in, it still feels like they're treating us like idiots that aren't following the plot.
Yeah.
And which is, I mean, it's a little bit insulting at this point. You know, even if I wasn't going in as a film fan, if I was just going in as somebody that wanted to watch the latest Marvel films, even I'd be, you know, even your more moronic viewer would be able to keep up at this point. You don't need to telegraph everything. There's just no need for it.
There's not. And all this is done at the expense of certain things as well, like Thor. I mean, he just literally disappears off screen for about 40 minutes, turns up in a cave with Selvig with no build-up, and then he gets visions about the Infinity Stones and completely blatantly teeing up Phase 3. The Infinity Stones had no business being in this film, I don't think, at all. You know,
no.
And it's just, you're there going, well, I mean, one of the biggest things with this in terms of this production is there's a lot with Thor that ended up on the cutting room floor, a lot. In terms of that journey and what he goes through, which is, I think, really bad in terms of how Whedon probably had to do this and edit this together. I don't think for 1 minute any of that Thor stuff was in his original script at all.
No, because if every single fan, and I think at this point we're talking everybody that saw this film, went, what the fuck was that? Yeah, and more importantly, what the fuck was the point in that?
Yeah.
You know, if everybody that went to see it said that, absolutely Joss Whedon said that, and almost certainly Chris Hemsworth went, what? Skinny dipping? Why?
Yeah.
You know, let's kill the giant AI robot thing. We can figure out the swimming pool thing later. You know, that's absolutely filmed by committee.
Yeah,
a bunch of morons that don't know how to make films, directing how films should be made.
Absolutely. It's not quite as obsequious as the moment in the middle of Batman versus Superman where Bruce Wayne gets his vision about all that stuff. That's just horrendous. But this isn't far behind, because it's the kind of stuff that should be in your post-credit sequence if you're going to have one. You know, you could have had an entire post-credit bit where Thor ends up going to a cave and sees all this stuff. You know, and so there's just a lot there that I just think it's at the expense of telling a really good sequel story that has concluded all of the build up. So that's where it went wrong. The big question, Andrew, is how do we fix it? How do we make Age of Ultron the film that we deserved? What's the first thing you would do to change it?
You give Joss Whedon final cut.
That's a good answer. Yeah.
Okay, I'm not stupid. I understand that with Marvel films and with any kind of franchise of that size, your director, unless he invented the franchise, is never going to get final cut. But don't bring back the director that made the Avengers, you know, Avengers Assemble, whatever you want to call it. Don't bring back the guy that made you more than $1 billion with a film that was clearly his vision for the most part. I mean, obviously there was Marvel going, but can you put this bit in, please? You know, but don't bring that guy back and then tie one hand behind his back.
Mm.
You know, don't bring that guy back. The guy that made you all that money, the guy that clearly knew what he was doing, the guy that could sew together a great film and go, but no, you're not allowed to do anything. When you get to that point, you may as well have hired me to do it.
Well, I think you're selling yourself a bit short there. I think you do a damn good job, but like,
well, you know, I'd have Marvel telling me what to do. I would do not that much worse than Joss Whedon.
But I think the thing is, I think you're right. If ever you were going to give a director the trust to have a final cut, it's someone like Joss Whedon. You know, the man is genuinely one of the greatest creatives working in Hollywood. You know, he really is. In terms of what he can do with character and what he can do with depth, you know, and what he can actually say that touches a very, you know, pop culture zeitgeist chord. I mean, you know, Buffy isn't for everybody, but it's one of those things that's lingered in pop culture. You know, it's lingered in the mind, even though it's 20 years old now and some.
Yeah.
And, you know, not many people can do that. You know, it's, and the Avengers, again, Avengers is going to be remembered as one of the greatest, you know, blockbusters of our age, really. And probably one of the great, if not the greatest superhero movie, you know, and that is no mean feat. And it is something that is,
I think the only other person though, not, you know, not to constantly hark on the same guy, but the only other person that's anywhere close to that in TV and film is J.J. Abrams.
Well, yeah.
Look at what he's done. And he was very similar. He had, you know, a shitload of TV shows 20 years ago. Or maybe not 20 for Alias.
It's getting on. 15 now for Alias, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, he had this butler and he was given a couple of films. What did he do? He made Mission Impossible 3.
Yeah.
And he took the third film in what should have been, at this point, a rubbished out franchise and made it great.
Yeah.
You know, and look what he's done since. You know, the man's brought back Star Trek. He's brought back Star Wars. You know, because people give him his film and they say, you know, especially for something like Star Wars, Disney will have gone, you have to stick to these rules. But outside of that, do your thing.
Yeah.
And that's clearly what hasn't happened with Age of Ultron. They've gone to Whedon and gone, I don't care what you've done last time. We need this and this is what we're going to get. You know, at which point you could have got any old TV pilot director to do it, because if you're going to you're gonna hold their hand that much, doesn't matter whose name's at the end of the credits.
And you know, there have been many talk. There's been a lot of talk about how Marvel have clashed with a lot of the directors. You know, Jon Favreau, even though he's still liked by them and he's still got a good relationship with Marvel, there was a point where that was really stretched, like 6 years ago with Iron Man 2. Which again was a similar, to some extent, a similar story in that, you know, the first Iron Man, I will stand by being one of the best Marvel films. I think it's great. He did a really good job. He set the template of what Marvel is. You know, without that film, there would be no MCU. You know,
well, this is it. I mean, you want to talk about a man that invented the franchise?
Yeah,
he rescued Marvel. Didn't
he? Jon Favreau deserves a hell of a lot of credit for what this is now. And then Iron Man 2 rolls along, and it's one of the worst Marvel films. And there's a good chance that it's because of meddling as we went into phase two and phase one. You know, a lot of it was him. You know, and he's come out as saying, you know, he struggled on that film because it wasn't, I don't think, the film he wanted fully to make, and it's been a repeating pattern ever since.
Yeah, well, this is the thing, isn't it? So, I mean, we had the two films one after the other with Marvel, didn't we? We had Age of Ultron, and then again, quite famously, we had Ant-Man, whose director walked away.
Yeah.
You know,
a great director as well, you know, a really good director.
Oh, yeah, a really good director. I mean, I don't buy into the, oh, we only saw a bit of Edgar Wright's vision. I wasn't on the film set. I don't know how much of it is what Edgar Wright done and how much of it is what the other guy done. But they did lose a very good director. And, I mean, luckily, Ant-Man, for better or worse, you know, it was a really good film. I really liked Ant-Man.
Yeah, Ant-Man was great, actually. Yeah,
but I do think that a big part of me loving Ant-Man so much is I'd just come out of Age of Ultron and gone, fuck Marvel.
Well, the thing is, everyone thought it would be the other way around. Everyone thought Age of Ultron was going to be awesome and then Ant-Man was going to be bloody awful because of all the production stuff that we'd heard. And as it turned out, I wouldn't say Age of Ultron is bloody awful, but it was the reverse in the sense that a lot of people came out of Age of Ultron and went, and then they went into Ant-Man and went, actually, that was bloody good. That was a lot better than we expected from a guy who doesn't really have a lot. Peyton Reed didn't have a lot behind him beforehand.
No, but they let, to a point, they've let them go back to, the, you know, each Marvel film has its sub-genre, if you like. And, you know, this is it's a Marvel film, but it's a heist film, you know. And they let it be a heist film, and it was a lot of fun for it. And, you know, it had a really cool cast.
Yeah,
you know, I really enjoyed Ant-Man.
Yeah,
A lot more. You know, even before Age of Ultron, when I saw, I think a lot of people had the same thing. You know, Avengers: Age of Ultron and Ant-Man at the end of Phase Two. Like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
You know, and this is this is just after Guardians of the Galaxy, where Marvel have literally looked at us and gone, we can sell you fucking anything.
It's true. You know,
so, but we're all still going, really, Ant-Man, how are you going to do that? And I have to admit, you know, the trailer, with the super special reveal for Cap 3 that also has Ant-Man in it, I was like, oh, wow, I forgot he was coming back for this.
Yeah.
and actually, that looks kind of cool. And I'm really looking forward to it. I'm very much looking forward to seeing Paul Rudd in Captain America.
Yeah, that'll be fun. And I think that the big thing with Civil War will be having the benefit, in terms of this point, having the benefit of the Russos, who are very obviously, really, they're now the stewards of Phase 3, really. Because
they've been handed Infinity War.
Exactly.
As well,
so they are in the middle now of writing Infinity War. So they basically would have crafted Civil War with Infinity War in mind, which means that you're likely to get a lot more of their path being a lot more fluid, which is perhaps one of the reasons why Civil War is getting good notices, because they've managed to work what they want to do into it. You know, and originally, the plot of Civil War wasn't going to be Civil War at all. You know, they come up with a completely different idea that I think was much more centered around Cap's, you know, search for Bucky and all that stuff that Winter Soldier leaves on the table. And then Kevin Feige came in one day into the office and went, "I've got two words for you, Civil War." And they went, "Ooh," because they knew that was one of the biggest, if not the biggest, Marvel story ever. And,
well, yeah, I mean, to be fair, I'd heard of that long before I started watching the films.
Exactly.
But through talking to other people.
But clearly, they had Civil War in mind when they were making Age of Ultron. Because I think, originally, I think they wanted Joss Whedon to do the three Avengers films. I think the idea was that he would have stuck around and he would have crafted Phase 3 and crafted Infinity War. And I think that he perhaps didn't want to do the same kind of plan that Marvel did. And I think he then realised that his vision was compromised and that I mean, bloody hell, given Age of Ultron nearly killed him, I think two Infinity War films would have done. I mean, the Russos have talked about the scope and complexity of what they're writing. They said this is off the chart. They said what we're actually trying to do with these films is insane. So, you know.
Well, I mean, even from where we are at the moment, they've got to, in the next, like, three or four films, they've got to take everything that we get at the end of Civil War and then roll everything up from here via Doctor Strange and however they're going to introduce that, plus Guardians, because they're all involved as well. Mm. You know, somehow they've got to take all that and get it into two films. We'll get it into one 4.5, 5-hour film and it not be shit.
Yeah.
You know,
and
I think that's a big ask. I think you can put it all together easily, but can you put it all together and make it watchable?
Well, yeah,
I think it is tough, and I'll happily admit, you know, that I am going into Civil War. I'm really excited for Civil War, but I am going into it a little bit skeptical, mainly because, and I don't. If people have been avoiding trailers at this point, you have to be careful about what you say. We had a super duper secret cameo from Sony turning up in this film.
I think if you don't know what that means, everybody, you are living under a rock somewhere.
You know what I mean?
But this
particular character has appeared in the final trailer for Civil War, and that's it.
Mm.
No one knows, apart from the people that were in the film, no one's got any idea at what point in production it was okayed for that character to be there. And if it's been shoehorned in, that could be a problem.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not saying for a second it will be, and I'm going in, like I say, as blank as I can, and I'm not going in hyped, because again, I think that actually was another one of Age of Ultron's biggest problems, the fact that it didn't stop showing me fucking adverts for it for a year.
Yeah.
There was no escaping the hype for Age of Ultron. It was everywhere.
Yeah.
And, you know, by the time you actually got to watching it, apart from the fact I felt like I'd seen most of the film with the 11 and a half trailers they put out. Anyway, you know, so I'm going into Civil War pretty blank, only having seen the trailers that have been on at the cinema. You know, I'm hopeful, and I'm not going in already hating it because of this, but I do think that is a concern.
Yeah. No, I think
mainly because of Marvel's now track record with characters.
But I think the problems that the Age of Ultron has are fixable. You know, I wouldn't necessarily change this sequel. You know, there could be other stories you could have done instead of Age of Ultron itself. But I think Ultron as a story and as a character is interesting. I think, like I said, I like the thematic side of it. I like I like what it's trying to say. I like the idea that it's starting to actually build divisions within the team. I like the idea that the ideologies are changing. I like the idea that, you know, you've got Tony going through this period of understanding that he can't save the world, and he's, you know, it's about character. A lot of it ultimately is about characters who begin to realise they're too much of a risk. You know, the Hulk is another one. You know, at the end he goes off because he realises he's too much of a risk. One of the great moments in this film is the Hulkbuster fight, which is, you know, it's really good. You know, it comes across really good. Go to sleep. There's lots of really good moments in that.
See, I'm so cynical about the Hulkbuster fight. The Hulkbuster fight would have been really cool if they hadn't put it in the damn trailer.
Well, again, it's that whole reason why I'm the same as you. I avoid trailers now like the wind, like the plague. I remember watching Deadpool, and there was a trailer for Batman vs Superman, and I literally sat there. Everyone thought I was insane. I sat there, fingers in ears, rocking with my eyes closed, and my girlfriend was a bit embarrassed because our friends were there with me, and she went, "What are you doing?" I said, "I can't see it because it tells me too much." And I would rather look like a lunatic in the middle of a cinema than be spoiled by cynical trailers.
Yeah. See, Deadpool was a good one for me because I saw two trailers for Deadpool, and they were the same trailer. They were the green band and red band trailer that they were showing in the cinema. That was the only one I'd seen before they were showing in Flicks. It was the only one I'd seen that appeared on my Twitter feed or whatever. And I went in literally knowing that 2.5 minutes and knowing a little bit about, obviously, because we all know a little bit about the production of the film and how much of a pain in the ass it was. I managed to go in completely blank, and the film was so much better for it. You know, I'm kind of sabotaging myself as well because I'm watching everything Suicide Squad I can find because I'm so pumped for that film.
Well, you relayed that. but it is part of it. You know, the hype and the amount they give away does affect the film when it's released. And compound that with the problems in the story, the fact that it's that in Age of Ultron it's too crowded, Ultron's ultimate aims are a bit nebulous in the end. The whole creation of the Vision, much as the Vision is quite cool, it's set up very much to feel like, you know, putting in place the Infinity Stones. I would completely get rid of the Infinity Stones. Whether or not I'd have the Vision, I don't know. Maybe not. I'd scrap all that. I'd get rid of all the Infinity Stone stuff, and I would make it much more about Ultron's attempt to, you know, either destroy humanity or take control of humanity in order to, you know, maybe not take control of humanity because that's what Loki did in the Avengers, or we wanted to do, you know, with mind control, but maybe destroy humanity because he thinks that, you know, they are too much of a risk almost, you know. I mean,
what you're actually saying is you want him to be Skynet.
It kind of, in a way. I guess so.
But to be honest, you know, that's right. That's kind of what I would have wanted out of him as well. That would have been the perfect character. It would have been, you know, the most threatening.
Yeah.
Seems like a good word. It would have been the most threatening character that the Avengers had taken down up to that point. Because now we're not just trying to enslave mankind. Now we're trying to actively destroy it. So absolutely have that. And I think that would have made for a much better bad guy. Not just a guy that wants to drop half a country on the other half of the country.
Yeah.
To kill the Avengers.
Right. And, it, you know, in the end, it just felt like it's the easy way out, where you could have had a much more interesting ending that is, would have felt a lot more personal, you know, because the whole idea that he is this twisted mirage, you know, this twisted reflection of what Tony's trying to do, and then he decides that humanity deserves wiping out as opposed to actually being supposedly there to protect everybody. And, you know, it's a great topical idea, you know, of the whole idea of our, you know, growing use of technology and AI could turn around. You know, and it does, like you say, it goes back to Skynet, it goes back to the Terminator. It's a similar idea, but done in a comic book way, and that you've got these heroes who are compromised by the fact that they've effectively created this. You know, Tony Stark did create this. You know, it's his fault. And that's why at the end he feels some guilt, and obviously he's going to play into Civil War in terms of what he does in that film, I think. I would imagine if it goes the same way as the comics. So it's like, well, you know, I can understand the points they're trying to do. I just want to get rid of all the bloat. I want to get rid of all the flashing to the future. I want to get rid of you know, characters like Scarlet Witch, but not, does she need to be here? Does the Falcon need to be in here? You know, it's like, well,
Scarlet Witch is another one. So I mean, again, because I don't know an awful lot about these characters. Even as X-Men, I don't know an awful lot about these characters. But she seems to be able to do everything.
Yeah.
She, you know, she's not just, you know, she can't just mess with people's minds, and she's not just, you know, Carrie with the whole telekinesis. She does a little bit of everything. She seems like the Swiss Army knife of the Avengers. Yeah, you know, she just doesn't seem to fit. She doesn't have a purpose. She just is there and can do shitloads.
Well, I think there's an important reason with this, in that Scarlet Witch is basically a mutant in all but name, and she's a very different kind of character to anything we've seen in the Marvel Universe, which is why I think she would ironically fit more in the Doctor Strange element of what we're going to get, because she is...
What do they call them in this?
Well,
they're not allowed to say mutant, are they?
No, because Fox have got mutant tied up, and also in the comics, Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch are Magneto's children. There's a hint in Days of Future Past that Quicksilver is Magneto's son. Whether or not they do more of that in Apocalypse, I don't know. So you know they are very much X-Men kind of mutanty kind of characters that almost, especially Scarlet Witch, they don't fit the Marvel that we've seen so far, which is why Scarlet Witch is, I think, part of the key to... I know she's not in Doctor Strange, but she's part of the key, I think, to more of that kind of area. You know, that much more mystical, magical kind of side of the universe. She could come in very handy probably when they get to Infinity War, I would imagine.
Yeah. But are we back to the same thing then, where they've put Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch in just because they can?
Right.
Just because they've somehow managed to wangle their way into legally being able to use them, even though Fox has the rights to all X-Men mutants.
Yeah, I think that's
literally
it.
Literally, the middle finger to Fox in their film. Look what we've done.
I think there is a little bit of that, definitely. Definitely.
Your summer tentpole ain't the place to do that.
No, exactly. And then especially when you're just going to dump Quicksilver as quick as that, you know, it feels like, well, what was the point? Yeah. What was the point? There were things in it I just don't think need to be there, and you could have much more compact, interesting story without them. Really.
Yeah.
So whether or not that would mean that we get a more interesting flick at the end of it is open to question, really. Let us know what you think. If you think that, you know, the things we've talked about and the things we've removed from the film, or and we're talking as people who aren't comic book obsessives. There are people, you guys who know the comics inside out, could probably come up with 10 more interesting ways to actually change Age of Ultron than we ever could.
I've seen some, you know, proper like comic book fans.
Yeah.
Just they savage this film.
Yeah, gut it from the inside out and rebuild it from the ground up. Which,
and you know, deservedly so, I think, to a point as well. I mean, I enjoy watching these films from the point of view of somebody that just watches films. But there has to be a point where you're making comic book films. Don't piss off the people that gave you the money to do this.
Yeah,
you know.
Oh, exactly. You know, don't shit on your own audience, really.
No.
And to an extent, I think Age of Ultron, for all its, you know, the good it does have, and it does that too much, I think. And I think ultimately, I feel a bit sorry for Joss Whedon.
It's a shame that his Marvel legacy ends there.
Yeah, it does, really.
And, you know, the film, like I say, I watched it a few times since. I warmed to it a bit more. Obviously, the second time I watched it, I went in massively disappointed already. So, you know, it wasn't as bad second time around. And it's an okay film, but it could have been so much better.
It really could have been. So we can only hope that Civil War repairs some of the damage and Infinity War really knocks it out of the park again. But if you have better ideas for how to fix Age of Ultron, or alternatively, you have films that you think could be fixed on Pick a Flick, then let us know. You know, send us a tweet. Send us a tweet? Send us a tweet. Send us a tweet. Send us a tweet, even, at Pick a Flick Pods, and, you know, let us know on Facebook at Pick a Flick, and, you know, just drop us an email at pickaflickpod@gmail.com. You know, if you want to suggest ways, you know, maybe we'll revisit this, you know, later on. But
do I mention that it does bring out probably the greatest line for me in all the films of 2015. It's still got my favourite line in it.
What's that?
It's when Thor says, "Fortunately, I am mighty."
That is quite good.
It means absolutely nothing unless you see what I look like and what I do for a living, but I walk around work saying it all the time. I literally walk into classrooms, you know, fix things, and then teachers go, I didn't realize you'd be able to do that. I thought it was dead. And I walk out going, fortunately, I am mighty, and then leave.
If Age of Ultron is worth it alone for you being able to do that, I think it's made it worthwhile. But yeah, well, thanks a lot, Andrew, for coming on to this experimental episode of Pick a Flick and sharing
very cool. Your thoughts. Thank you for having me on.
No, it's absolute pleasure as always. Yeah, until you're next on the show, which I'm sure won't be too long away. Where can we find you around?
I spend all of my time generally moaning and pissing and bitching about films and games and TV and things on Twitter at Brooker411. And I do an awful lot of writing for Fail Critics. I do a lot of their film reviews for them.
Yeah, great film reviews as well. And Fail Critics is just a great site full of great people. So do check those guys out and check out their far superior podcast to mine when you get a chance. they haven't even paid me to say
again,
that.
You know, I'm really lucky. I'm not reviewing Civil War. So Mr. Hughes will be doing that one, which means I get to go and see the film and just sit and put my feet up and not have to be critical about it. I can just switch off and enjoy it.
Yeah.
Which, you know, when I first started doing it was really cool just sit and watch films and go, oh, I'm going to rip into that bit. But then you go see films that you really want to see and you start seeing how shit they are.
And you're like, and you go,
oh, fuck's sake, why can't I just enjoy it? So luckily I get to go to Civil War and just be a film fan for a change. It's going to be quite nice.
Yeah, that is a nice thing to be able to do. Well, I hope you get to go and see it. If not the midnight screening, which will be an endurance test, then very soon.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's bank holiday weekend, so it will be done by the time I go back to work on Tuesday.
Yeah.
No doubt about it.
I think that'll be the same for many people, certainly be the same for me. So, yeah, it just leaves me to thank everybody for listening, and as ever, and do look us up at Black Hole Media as well. We're part of the podcast network at Black Hole Media on Twitter. We've got some loads of other podcasts, loads of exciting stuff going on, and we're also on Facebook where you'll find lots of links to what we do as well. Yeah, until we're back for another episode. Once one last thank you, almighty Brooker.
Thank you very much. It's always a pleasure coming on.
Cheers. And remember, guys, you pick the film, we talk about it. Simple. See you again.
strings, but now I'm free.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.